This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 339, for the weekend of February 1st through February 3rd. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, this podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff as we see fit. And speaking of fit, how's it going over there, Art?
I am not fit. I am here, but, you know.
Fit to be tied?
Fit to be tied, yeah. Yeah, fits and starts. Maybe some other fits things, but we'll move on.
Okay, so the first part of the show, we look at what happened at the box office last week. And, you know, we did miss a week, so but we're just going to talk about this most recent weekend, as soon as I can find the tab. Okay, here we go. So, thanks to BoxOfficeMojo.com, weekend box office, here's the top five for last weekend, which would be January 25th through January 27th. At number one, in its second week release, we have Glass at $18.9 million. At number two, we have The Upside in its third week release with $11.9 million. At number three, a little drop down to Aquaman, which came in $7.3 million in its sixth week of release. So domestic, we're looking at $316 million. Number four, in yellow, because it's a new release, The Kid Who Would Be King is not the king of the box office because he came in at we'll be generous and say $7.2 million. Yes, 7.2. And then number five, Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, $6.1 million in its seventh week release, $169 million. So there is your top five. Anything stand out?
Nothing. Second week in a row for Glass being number one, so that's pretty good. I remember we talked about Glass opening and opening weekend. I went back a week. It did 40 million, so it didn't do the 60 they were projecting. So it came up a little short on that for its opening weekend, and that was the 18, 19, 20. Oh, here we go. No, that's not the 4-day preview. The 4-day preview, 46. So 15 million short, not too bad. 75% of what they were shooting for. So, other than that, not surprising. No real big.
All right. So what has become a recent tradition on the show is we're going to do a little genre spotting. And so for the new release for number four, The Kid Would Be King, Box Office Mojo is saying that's fantasy dash live action. And it came in at 106th as fantasy live action. So, Art, take a guess at any top 10 in fantasy live action.
I'm going to guess the top 10 is going to be filled with Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings in some mixture for seven of those 10 spots. Or wait, was it eight of those 10 spots?
No, I think seven. Because we're looking at Beauty and the Beast at number one.
Okay.
Alice in Wonderland at number five.
Okay.
Thor Ragnarok at number eight.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then the rest are Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter's.
So let's look at the bottom then.
Okay.
Since we had a pretty good handle on the top.
But wait, there are eight total movies. What movie didn't make the cut?
Well, one, Beauty and the Beast, two, Deathly Hallows Part Two, Harry Potter, three, Return of the King, four, Two Towers, six, Harry Potter 1, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Number seven, Fellowship of the Ring. Eight, Thor Ragnarok. Nine, The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. 10, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Oh, so a bunch of Harry Potters didn't make it. Okay.
Yeah, so the lowest Harry Potter just by scanning, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, number 18.
Oh, all right.
All right, so let's now we're going to scroll down to the bottom. And it's not necessarily bottom because, you know, I did say it was 106. They only do the top 100.
Right.
So from nine, or no, I'm sorry, they give you 101 to 142. So Kid Who Would Be King would be 106. I don't even know why that's on the list. Okay, 141 After the Wizard made $3,184.
Never heard of it.
140 Axe Giant: The Wrath of Paul Bunyan. 3,287. That was in 2013. 139 Iron Warrior. That was 87. 4:44: Last Day on Earth. 323. Or I'm sorry, that's $17,801. That was 2012. All right, I'm just going to keep going until we find someone. Okay, and we're not going to go that long. 137, The Sorcerer and the White Snake. And that was not an 80s concert film.
Right.
136, The Monster Hunt. 135, Phantom of the Theater. Not opera, we went theater.
No.
134, theater. Byzantium. 133, Upside Down. 132, Tale of Tales. 131, Gore. G-O-R.
Okay.
Came in 1988.
Can you go up the list until you actually see something you recognize?
You don't remember Gore?
No, I don't remember Gore. Yeah, and I'm really...
Okay, let's... Sinbad: The Fifth Voyage.
Okay.
2014. The Barbarians. Remember the two brothers? Remember it?
Oh, wow. From like the 80s?
Yeah. They're clocking that $800,000. May 15th, 1987.
Wow. I do remember that one. Okay.
Your Hunter from the Future.
I totally remember Your Hunter
from the Future. Okay. That was 117. In the Name of the King. I know you know that one.
And I've seen that one. Yeah. I own
Cole,
that one.
You own it. Okay. Good news. Cole the Conqueror, Red Sonja.
Yeah,
107, okay. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and then we're at The Kid Who Would Be King. Now, what I was gonna say is in that 91 to 100 block, Legend.
Yeah.
I think the original Dungeons & Dragons, Dragon Slayer, the Beastmaster.
Dragon Slayer, Beastmaster. Yeah, these are ones I would have named.
Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Highlander: Endgame. Highlander 3: The Final Dimension. Deathstalker. Army of Darkness and Brotherhood of the Wolf is at 100.
Deathstalker, Army of Darkness, Brotherhood. I've seen all of those movies because this is a genre I really like. Like once you get past the very obscure things, I probably know most of the things on the list.
There is a note at the bottom of this page. Note, quote, fantasy refers to movies about a quest set in a fantastical world, be it this one with supernatural tendencies or another one a la Middle Earth. Technically speaking, the Star Wars movies are fantasy, but it's falsely perceived as sci-fi. Oh, boy. Hence, its inclusion on... I know, but it's just, you know, there's not everyone holds the same opinion. I mean, I'm not saying I don't agree with you. I'm just saying others. hence, its inclusion on this list would not be illuminating in how this genre fares at the box office. If there are any movies that you think should be on the list, email us at mail@boxofficemojo.com.
Okay. Wow. Right.
So that will conclude this deep dive. And kind of as a tease, if you are interested in looking at some other genres, like... It starts with 3D, and halfway through is kidnapping dramas. You can also go down a little bit more, and you can go to alien invasion sci-fi, slacker/stoner movies, and at the very bottom we have womanizer/cad/player, young adult book adaptations, and of course zombie movies. So yeah, we're going to be getting to some of these in future shows, so stay tuned. All right, so that's going to end our long-winded look at last week's box office. So now we're going to go to the second segment, which is kind of a skeleton segment, because this is the part of the show where we talk about what's coming out in the theater this weekend. But we don't have any movies that is coming above our threshold as a wide release movie. So we have no new movies to talk about. So let's forget that and let's rocket past that to segment number 3, which is Share Time, where Art and myself are going to talk about what we've been watching or what we've been doing. And since we didn't record last week, that is going to be 2 weeks of time. Also, we did not get any voicemails. We would gladly be playing those, but we don't have any from our regulars or any from new people. So, Art, why don't you kick us off and tell us what you've been up to the past 2 weeks.
Okay, what I have been up to the past 2 weeks. I quickly scanned through that list, and I think I haven't seen like 10 out of the 100 movies on the list. all right, so I have been watching. I saw that they got confirmed for Lost in Space is getting another season. So I started rewatching through that series and enjoying it as much as I did the first time. I saw there was a new comedy special from Gabriel Iglesias, Fluffy. I watched that. Very funny, very entertaining, just as much as his other shows. It was my anniversary this past weekend. And not a movie, but still a theater performance nonetheless. We went and saw Cirque du Soleil, Amaluna, that is playing here in Dallas. And thoroughly enjoyed that. If you haven't ever seen Cirque du Soleil, it is totally worth doing. Later found out, my buddy Daniel from my gaming group, he was at that exact same show, probably sitting 7 or 8 rows in front of me. So that was kind of funny. I went and saw Glass. I was not expecting to. When we talked last, we talked about how neither one of us thought we would see it anytime soon. Well, that ended up not being the case. Will, the owner of the board game store, and a couple of his friends were going out to see it, and I tagged along with them. I had not seen Split. Still have not seen Split. I need to see Split. But you didn't need to see Split to see Glass. Because I think they thoroughly kind of slotted everything in. There were several flashbacks. Flashbacks even to Unbreakable. They really tied to get everything all together nicely. I enjoyed what the twist of the movie was. It was actually really, really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I need to, when it all comes out as like a 3-movie set, I want to pick that up and watch through it all again, from beginning to end. I enjoyed it that much. I think it's definitely worth seeing. And that is it for my share time.
Okay, well, first of all, congratulations on the anniversary.
We have 5 years.
Second of all, how was the screening, or when you went to go see Glass, was it a full theater?
We went Sunday night very late. We went to a 8:30 show on a Sunday night. Okay. And the theater was maybe 30% full, 30 to 40%. It was a good sized crowd for late on a Sunday.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. So my share time. I feel like I should report back that we, as of last night, or actually no, Monday night, we have completed 5.5 seasons of Game of Thrones. And so we have we're in season 6, so yeah, we have 1.5 seasons to go. So we're going to be well ahead of the April premiere. My daughter continues to be obsessed with it, and I just love how irritated she gets when the episode ends and she wants to watch more, or when certain things happen to her favorite characters and other things don't happen to the people that she hates. So I gotta tell you, you know, she's obsessed with the show. I'm obsessed with the histories and lore special features that show up on every disc, that just fill in. I mean, it kind of puts you in the certain moods, but it also, you know, gives you some key background information so you can kind of get a better idea of what's going on. Season 1, They did a brilliant job of filling in all the details for Robert's Rebellion. This last season 5 has a great feature on the Dance of Dragons, which was the Civil War that happened a little before Robert's Rebellion. And it's, you know, the Animax style that they have combined with the voice performances. It's just great. And there's another one that was, it's a 45-minute separate disc. And I don't even remember what season it came with, but it's just excellent. I believe it's called Conquest and Rebellion. So I'm loving this show, even though, you know, when you're coming up to a show that you're fully invested in and it's going to be the last season, you know, you do have some excited anticipation about finding out how the story ends, but you also have that dread that it's not going to be as good as I think it should be. So, but you know, then again, I just need to be cautiously optimistic that that they will finish it like it deserves to be finished. So Game of Thrones. Okay, so I ended up watching a movie. I tried to get out to the theater to watch a movie. My son was really looking forward to maybe seeing this new Dragon Ball movie.
Mm.
The Dragon Ball Z, the Broly movie.
Broly, yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm not going to win any Father of the Year awards. We went 20 minutes before the movie was going to start. I was trying to pick a theater, and I realized that there was only one theater within 15 miles that was showing it. And that was the one at Ontario Mills, which is our biggest mall in our area. And I couldn't believe I didn't put two and two together, but it was sold out. You know, between it being a big mall and there not being a lot of other theaters,
right?
So we tried to go at 1:20. The 1:20 was sold out. The next showing was going to be at 3:00. The 3:00 wasn't completely sold out, but they have 4 seats in the front row.
Right.
I told my son we're not doing that. So I put a quick post on Instagram saying that, you know, we're going to get ice cream because we didn't make it into the movie. And a buddy of mine said that, you guys are insane trying to go there. You guys have to go to a faraway one. You have a better chance going, because he had no problem getting. We did not see Dragon Ball Z. So I'm gonna see. And, you know, I was looking during the, when we're talking about box office results, it's still only on like 1,200 screens.
Yeah.
But it's got, you know, it's got the average to do better. Or to, you know, maybe put it in more screens. But, you know, what are you going to do? All right. So the one movie that I ended up watching, you know, I'm trying to clear the bottom of my DVR. So I ended up watching Hidden Figures, which, if you don't remember, it was about the unsung women who, black women who played pivotal roles in the space program. Mm-hmm. When we're trying to beat Russia into space. There was a lot of hype about this movie, and I never got to watch it. But it was a very enjoyable film. I'm terrible with names, but the was it the Mahershala Ali? He has a small part in this, but he plays the suitor of Taraji P. Henson.
Okay.
And there is a super sweet and sincere proposal scene that was just unbelievable. And I will say, of the three stories that get presented, I wanted to know more about Octavia Spencer's story. And this totally comes from me being, you know, from a computer science background. She was kind of a supervisor and kind of saw the writing on the wall that they're going to need a programmer for this new IBM machine that they're getting that takes the entire room. And she went out and basically stole a programming book. And just that whole piece with her story, I would like to see some more exposition on that part. But really good performances. It's I think it's definitely, you know, worth watching, and I always tend to forget, or not really forget, but not pay attention to what, you know, the race relations in that period of time were country. It was kind of a stark reminder, but I did end up watching Martin Luther King, not on purpose. It just that's how it happened. But excellent film. I would recommend that you check it out.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. Just didn't get around to it at the time.
But yeah, the end, there is a lot of Taraji P. Henson running because she's not allowed to go in the bathroom in her building, and she has to go all the way across the campus to go to the bathroom. So, but yeah, it's really good, and I think it deserves all the hype that it got. Okay, so I think that's going to be it for my share time. So now let's move on over to news. So Art, what do you got?
Okay, first up on the docket, Affleck is out as Batman sets a June 2021 date. Warner Brothers has marked out several key release dates for upcoming tentpoles, with three projects based on DC Comics properties all given 2021 release dates. The first is the newly announced DC Super Pets, with Jared Stern and Sam Levine will helm. Project deals with the pets of a number of DC superheroes teaming up to form their own crime-fighting team. The Matt Reeves-directed The Batman is the most high-profile announcement today, with a June 25th, 2021 release that is so far away. In addition, Warner's has finally confirmed that Ben Affleck will not be returning to play the Caped Crusader. The third is the James Gunn penned and likely directed The Suicide Squad, which will open on August 6th, 2021. And so, yeah, that you know, being a big confirmation there, James Gunn is going to retool The Suicide Squad. James Gunn, who was famously fired from the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, which he helped create, is in negotiations to direct The Suicide Squad sequel at Warner Brothers Pictures. Potential hiring is not unexpected, as Gunn had already been set to pen the DC Comics-inspired villain team-up film, which has been set for an August 21st. Yeah, we said that, blah, 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 blah. And it's also being reported it's being dubbed more of a relaunch than a direct sequel, with Gunn's plans to take the franchise in a new direction with a mostly all-new cast of characters and actors. What that means for the existing cast, like Will Smith, Margot Robbie, Jared Leto, and Jai Courtney, is unclear. So, yeah, all very interesting news. It'll be interesting to see if he can do for Suicide Squad what he did for Guardians of the Galaxy. They could really turn things around over there at DC.
Well, it's gonna be interesting because now there's gonna be expectations and what Gunn does. Well, I mean, because when Gunn took over Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. no one knew what to expect.
Right.
Because he's mainly a horror director up to that point.
Right.
Even though he had done one superhero movie. But now, with all the things that happened with Disney, after all of the breakout success of Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, we're going to have a certain level of expectations with Suicide Squad, where there weren't any really that many expectations on Guardians of the Galaxy. And what he's going to do, it's going to be interesting what he does. You know, because he came up with the whole Walkman shtick,
right?
In Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm not saying that he can't catch lightning in a bottle again, but we're kind of in a different place than he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, for sure, 100%.
And but the nice thing is, I think there's going to be less pressure because he's going to be coming off of, you know, whatever between Aquaman and when Suicide Squad comes out. You know, it seems like they have a different corporate strategy, and hopefully they keep it going. And you know, there's not. Another thing is, I hope they let James Gunn be James Gunn.
100%.
And they don't note him to death.
Right. No. Give him. Well, they're already in the toilet. So really, the best thing to do is just take their hands off of it. You know, because
I don't think they're in the toilet anymore.
Well, no, I meant as far as with Suicide Squad.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
You know, just hands off and let the man do what he does. You know, I mean, keep your finger on it, you know, so that, because I don't know how much the studio was involved in what all went down at Guardians. I'm assuming from the way everyone talks about it, you know, that he was given pretty free rein because it was such a non-existent franchise to the public.
I think that no one making a Marvel movie had free rein.
No, 100% no. But a lot more so than if you're working on something like Iron Man or right. Thor or, you know, all the big franchises. Yes, you know, of course it had to, because it had to tie in. You know, it had its points where it was going to touch and eventually be brought in. So 100%. But as far as for, like, the story beats that didn't have anything to do with the overall universe, the fact that they were doing a Guardians movie at all, you know, really said a lot about the direction they were going.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. I have high hopes. I really enjoyed Aquaman. I have very high hopes for Shazam. You know, I want to see what they do with Wonder Woman in the 80s. I feel like they are definitely moving in the right direction now. And we'll see where it goes. Have you listened to the Backseat Producers Aquaman episode yet?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just leave that there.
Okay. All right. That's all.
But
I'll do that tomorrow.
But I'm perfectly happy with the direction they're currently headed in, and I look forward to see what James Gunn can do with Suicide Squad if given enough leeway. So yeah, I hope that's the way that works out. I hope they continue to turn things around. I know that it seems kind of public that they've moved away from this whole interconnected universe, and they're just going to put the stories out there and let them stand on their own, and that's fine. You know, let's see where it goes.
Okay. This is probably a couple weeks overdue, considering that, you know, we're almost 1 month into 2019. But Box Office Mojo has a look back at 2018's record year at the domestic box office. It seems like every year is breaking records, so it's not really that earth-shattering that they've had another record year. Disney, I guess, was accounted for 26%, roughly, of the overall domestic market with all their movies. And, you know, there's a lot of explanation and throwing out stats and all this stuff and all the different studios. But I just wanted to go all the way down the bottom. And they have, you know, finally, with the 2018 now behind us, below is a list of the top 20 films based on calendar grosses. So number one, we have Black Panther at $700 million. And then we have two in the $600 range. We have Avengers and then Incredibles 2. Both Disney.
Mm-hmm.
In the 400 range, we have one movie, Jurassic World. In the 300 plus range, one movie, Deadpool 2. So, and so if you look at the top five, Black Panther is the only one that is not a sequel. In the 200 range, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, seven movies in the 200 range. Dr. Seuss's The Grinch. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Mission Impossible Fallout, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Solo, A Star Wars Story, and Venom. So in that 200, Sony had two of them, Paramount had one with Mission Impossible, and Universal had Dr. Seuss.
Okay.
Stars Born at 201, and that's Warner Brothers. And, you know, and Aquaman was probably just getting started, but he came in with the $199 million. So for the rest of the list, we have Aquaman 199, Bohemian Rhapsody 189, Paramount A Quiet Place 188, Ralph Breaks the Internet 177, that's a Disney, Crazy Rich Asians, Warner Brothers 174, Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation, that's another Sony 167, Halloween 159, and then Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald, Warner Brothers 156. So,
so I've seen, out of those 20 movies, I've seen 13 of them. So that was pretty good.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six.
Okay.
So
I saw all of the top five. I saw four out of the next seven. And then And I saw four of the bottom 13. Or wait, no, that would have been bottom nine. So yeah, I did. That was a good year.
Yes, it was. All right, what do you got next?
Okay. Being as you really caught my ear with Disney being about 26% of what all was going on out there, this next one came to mind. Disney to outspend Netflix in 2019. A new feature piece in trade paper Variety has gone into detail about what's going on behind the scenes to get the upcoming Disney streaming service up and running. The most interesting fact? Spending. The report indicates Disney will spend roughly $16.4 billion this year alone on content, with over $500 million of that earmarked just for original content for Disney. So, a half a billion dollars on original content, and yet they're still spending 16 other billion dollars. This doesn't include their sports budget, which is a further $7.4 billion on top of that. So there's going to be sports on Disney Plus? What? Okay. The studio's expenditure is expected to account for roughly 22% of the total $107 billion estimated to be spent on global content in 2019 by large media companies. Its closest rivals were AT&T Time Warner, which is expected to spend approximately $14.3 billion, and Netflix, which will spend $14 billion. At present, the Mouse House is rumored to have a rudimentary working version of the Disney Plus in place by April to show off to investors, with an official launch to take place on the back half of 2019. Disney Plus is expected to boast a library of more than 5,000 hours of the studio's films and TV programs. Disney's purchase of Fox is expected to be complete by March.
Just remember that Disney owns ABC and ABC owns ESPN.
Oh, okay.
That's probably what the sports that they're talking about.
The sports is going on. Okay. All right. Well, there we go.
All right. So to continue the Disney Love Fest, Art, what's this Sunday?
The Super Bowl.
Super Bowl number 53 is Sunday. And
Patriots versus I don't know who.
The Rams.
Okay. Go yeah. Rams.
Yeah, the Rams. Oh, if you don't root for the Patriots, just un-American. No, I'm kidding.
No. I was told. Wait. Let me explain this here. Okay, I live in Dallas now. Okay, and I was told that the Patriots can't win because then they will have one more Super Bowl ring than the Dallas Cowboys. So I can't root for the Patriots. I have to root for the Rams. And let me say this. I was telling you before we started that we played Blood Rage last night. Mm-hmm. And the Ram clan won. So this may be a portent of things to come.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Continue, sir.
All right. So Disney set to launch Super Bowl 2019 ads. Super Bowl 53 is only a week away, but at this point it seems Disney is the only studio really willing to pay up to $5.3 million for a 30-second spot during the big event taking place in Atlanta.
Wow.
Ad Age reports that Disney will air an undisclosed number of spots in the game. Last year, the studio used the event to premiere the first footage from Solo, a Star Wars story, as well as new footage from Avengers Infinity War. So what could they be showing this year? Well, maybe Avengers Endgame, and probably a trailer for Aladdin, including our first potential look at Will Smith in full blue, hold on, I just threw it in my mouth, genie form. We also have maybe some new Captain Marvel, Dumbo, Lion King. They're saying it's highly unlikely that Episode 9, anything from Star Wars Episode 9, will be shown. They're expecting that I guess there's a big Star Wars Celebration convention in April. And they'll probably hold that back for either that or maybe ahead of the Endgame movie in cinemas. Both Universal and Paramount had big trailer premieres last year, including Mission: Impossible Fallout, with its memorable first trailer launched simultaneously with a TV spot in Stealing Thunder. This year, Paramount might drop a Pet Sematary spot. Universal, however, could very well reveal a TV spot and first trailer for Hobbs and Shaw, as Dwayne Johnson indicated on social media something will be seen during the game. So Hobbs and Shaw being the something with Fast and Furious. Also, we were just talking about Disney outspending Netflix. Netflix also remains a big question. The streamer had made headlines with its surprise launch of the Cloverfield Paradox right after the game last year. This year, a Stranger Things third season trailer launch is quite possible, as well as a new, I have no idea what this is, Triple Frontier spot or trailer. So, Triple Frontier says here... Oh, wait, it's going to take me to Netflix. I don't want to do that. Five former Special Forces operatives reunite to plan a heist in a sparsely populated multi-border zone of South America. For the first time in their prestigious careers, these unsung heroes undertake this dangerous mission for self instead of country. But when events take an unexpected turn and threaten to spiral out of control, their skills, their loyalties, and their morals are pushed to a breaking point in an epic battle for survival. And so we're looking at Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Pedro Pascal, who, for Game of Thrones fans, played Oberyn Martell, Oscar Isaac, and some other lesser-known people. So that's that's what Triple Frontier is. And, so those are some of the commercials. If you're not so much in the sports ball and all that stuff, that's something you could look out for.
Okay, well, I don't know. There's a couple of potlucks happening this weekend. I may end up watching some of the game. We'll see how that goes. But speaking of Oscar Isaac, Oscar Isaac is Duke Leto in Dune. So Star Wars and Ex Machina star Oscar Isaac is in talks to join the cast of Denis Villeneuve's adaptation of Frank Herbert's novel Dune. Isaac will play Leto Atreides, father of the film's protagonist, Paul Atreides. Timothy Chalamet, do you know who that is? That name's not ringing a bell.
He was Call Me by My Name or something like that.
Okay, I didn't see it. I'm not familiar, but that's why you're the good host. All right, a small but key role in the saga. I just thought that was interesting. They're getting some really big names to fill in here. We were talking about Dave Bautista the week before and Stellan Skarsgård. And then with a quick follow-up on that, they are seeking Zendaya for the Chani role, the love interest of Paul Atreides. So they are they're tying down a bunch of big names for this Dune reboot. It could really go somewhere. We'll see how this goes.
Interesting. All right. This is one news story that I don't remember if we talked about this already. But did you hear that Guillermo del Toro has 15 completed screenplays?
No.
So back on November 26th of last year, he put on Twitter, screenplays I have developed, fully written or co-written, that have gone unproduced so far. So here's the list. The Witches, Justice League Dark, Beauty and the Beast, At the Mountains of Madness, Fantastic Voyage, The Count of Monte Cristo, Mephisto's Bridge, Pacific Rim 2, and it says parentheses, very different. And then he goes on to say, Secret Project Untitled, Superstitious, Nightmare Alley, Haunted Mansion, The Hulk Pilot, The Buried Giant, The Coffin, Drood, D-R-R-O-D, I'm sorry, D-R... OOD, yes. And list of seven, says Mark Frost. Oh, and he says a few others. The guy's been busy.
Yeah, he has. I recognize some of those names.
It says, they said the biggest one is At the Mountains of Madness. This is the biggie, and the passion project that Del Toro seems most determined to make. At the Mountains of Madness, an adaptation of the classic 1931 H.P. Lovecraft novel that revolves around a disastrous expedition to Antarctica that leads to a group of explorers discovering ancient creatures. Back in 2010, after Del Toro left The Hobbit, it was announced that James Cameron would be coming on board to produce Del Toro's ambitious At the Mountains of Madness, which would be presented in 3D and was intended as the filmmaker's next project. More star power was gained when Tom Cruise signed on to take the lead role in 2011, but unfortunately in March of that year, Universal scuttled the project. It reportedly due to Del Toro's unwillingness to budge from a $150 million budget and the potential for an R rating. That following week, Del Toro signed on to make Pacific Rim.
Okay. Wow. Such a mistake. It needs an R rating. It needs a big budget. It would do so well. Very sad. Very sad. All right.
What do you got next?
So we were talking about how the kid who would be king, the kid who would be king to lose $50 million. Looks to be the year's first big flop after the $60 million budgeted film debuted last weekend to a disastrous $7 million. Variety reports that executives at rival studios estimate the film could lose around $50 million after taking marketing and production costs into account. Though home entertainment sales, television licensing packs, and other ancillary revenues could reduce losses. That's really sad that this is going to take such a beating. It looked cute. I didn't go see it, though, so I didn't help.
Yeah, they're hoping that, I mean, because it hasn't opened in Great Britain yet.
Ah, okay.
So maybe there might be some life there, but probably not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm pretty much out of news stories, so I'm just going to talk about this last one, which I got from Cracked. And it's not as bad as you might think. This is six crazy shared universes Hollywood's already making. I'm sorry, actually making. And some of these aren't really worth talking about. They have a Bond-verse, the Serial Monster-verse. yes, General Mills is reportedly launching its own shared universe starring the monsters mascots from its breakfast cereals. So we're looking at Count Chocula, Boo Berry, and of course Frankenberry. And there's actually a billboard in LA with a Frankenberry doing like a, I don't even know what
did you
call it. It's like a model.
Did you see Monster Crunch at all, or hear about Monster Crunch?
I saw someone playing at Gen Con, but I didn't really look at what it was.
All right. I've heard it's actually a really good game. And now I kind of want to track it down. It's a ladder game, you know, with the Monster Crunch theme on it, with the different monster cereals.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. And so, I don't know. It would be interesting to see where that could possibly go. They're making a little resurgence. I always liked those cartoons as a kid.
For the filthy urchin filled dollverse, for parents who would rather shove an iPad in their kids' faces at bedtime than endure the painful monotony of reading, Netflix is planning to bring the world of Roald Dahl to life, and by life we mean a shitload of TV shows. Netflix spent a nine-figure sum for 16 Roald Dahl books.
Wow.
Keep in mind that before any production costs, just for the rights to tell the stories of various filthy children escaping abusive homes with the help of creepy but magical strangers. We don't have many details, but Netflix has hinted that the doll stories will be part of a shared universe, which makes sense because they spent nine figures for the just rights of these or just for the rights of these characters. And so if you ever wanted to see Willy Wonka battle the BFG or Matilda and Charlie compare notes on the abject shittiness of life, you're in luck. Some of the other books Netflix acquired include The Enormous Crocodile, The Twits, and George's Marvelous Medicine. Hell, for $1 billion, if Roald Dahl scrawled an obscene doodle on a cocktail napkin, they should be allowed to adapt it in a show, right? And then there's three, The Greshamverse, the legal drama guy, and then the Lovecraft remake verse. But the whole reason I wanted to bring this up is number one, the Spider-Man-less Spider-Verse. If Into the Spider-Verse taught us anything, it's that the key to a great Spider-Man movie is to cram in as many goddamn spider people as humanly possible. But for some reason, we're due to get a whole bunch of Spider-Man movies with no Spider-Man whatsoever. Sony still has the rights to the iconic superhero, and while they partnered with Marvel to integrate Peter Parker into the MCU, where he can lead fun, John Hughes-like adventures while occasionally being horribly murdered, that still leaves a whole host of side characters who could each star in their own movie. Most recently, the blockbuster hit / gritty reboot of The Mask, known as Venom, proved that audiences would turn out for a movie about a Spider-Man villain without Spider-Man showing up. And because the folks over there seem to like money, it doesn't look like they're going to stop. First off, we're getting a movie about Morbius the Living Vampire, starring Jared Leto and a bunch of people who are about to hate Jared Leto. Leto's already been stoking fan excitement, posting a Twitter video of himself shaving, presumably because flossing footage would have been too damn exciting. Other planned entries in the Marvel Understudies universe include movies centering on Black Cat and Silver Sable, as well as one about Kraven the Hunter. And even though the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man reboot was a dumpster fire that's been put out the pasture in the mixed metaphor that is a pasture full of flaming garbage receptacles, its villain-starring spin-off Sinister Six is reportedly still in development. So we may get to see Paul Giamatti's Rhino drag the Green Goblin and his friends on an awkward journey through wine country, after all.
Oh, you're a bad man.
All right.
Was that the story, or did you throw that in?
Huh?
I said, was that in the actual story, or did you throw that in?
I read everything that was on the page.
Okay,
I did not,
all right.
I did not add anything.
Okay.
I'm not that bright. Go ahead.
I think you are. I think you are. That's why I make sure.
All right.
No problem. Okay. I'm going to finish up with the free Alita Battle Angel screenings this week, which won't do anybody any good, because when will this drop? Sometime this weekend, right?
Probably.
Okay, so for all of you out there, you totally missed it. I wish I'd have saw this. Oh, it wouldn't have mattered if I'd seen it last week, because we didn't do a show last week. But I already looked into it, and it's already sold out in my town, so it probably wouldn't make any difference. But they're doing free screenings for Alita Battle Angel. And let's see, here we go. Attempting to get the word out, 20th Century Fox is holding a series of free early screenings of the James Cameron produced and Robert Rodriguez directed Alita Battle Angel to be held this Thursday, January 31st, across the U.S. and Canada. Fans can get passes to the screening at experiencealita.com, with showings to take place in 35 participating locations, including San Francisco, Houston, Austin, Boston, New York, Chicago. They're being held well in advance of the February 14th wide release of the film, which is rumored to support a $200 million budget. Cameron will also participate in a fan Q&A that night. Fans can submit questions through the hashtag #ExperienceAlita. I just think it's interesting that they're giving away free passes to the movie early to try and build up some buzz. So I hope this works out for them. This is a based on a beloved anime. I hope it tells the story well, unlike a lot of other live-action anime-type things that have kind of fallen flat. I put myself on the wait list, so hopefully if somebody cancels, I might be able to slip in there. We'll see what happens.
All right. And so that's going to bring us to the end of news, and that's going to bring us to the end of this show. So this has been Backseat Box Office. Our website, backseatproducers.com. Where you can find back episodes of this show and Backseat Producers, like the last two episodes of Backseat Producers, BSP episode 469, they reviewed Black Mirror Bandersnatch. 468, Art kind of talked about it earlier, they talk about Aquaman. So so you can check out those things. Also, if you wanted to leave us a voicemail, and if you leave us a voicemail, we will play it during our show. The voicemail number is 618-207-4794. That's 618-207-4794. A bunch of other stuff on backseatproducers.com, backseatproducers.com. So other than that, thank you for listening. Take care of yourselves. Art, thank you for joining me, and everyone, we will catch you next time. Art, what do you want to say?
Good night, everybody.